This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the Western Hunting Hub podcast. Elk season's rolling and it's fun to see all the pictures and things of people having some success. Looks like a great year. Guys are having a lot of success, so that's great. Makes me a lot bummed I'm not in the elk woods this year, but gives me motivation for another year to get after it. And I'm sure many of you guys out of a elk hunting state can relate to that. So, but it's still early September and there's a lot of elk season left, so I wanted to give you one more elk hunting episode. This one is with Marcus Simmons with Everything Outdoors. We talk elk hunting, so enjoy this one with Muck Simmons.
I live in the southeastern part of the, like, I'm probably only, I don't know, 100 miles from North Dakota. Oh. So I'm in the northeast part of the province, and we have lots of sharp tail and pheasant and Hungarian partridge.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we only get our small covey
of hunts. What kind of a dog do you have?
Llewellyn Setter. And
no idea what that is.
It's basically an English setter, but the Llewellyn is what is being traced back to a certain lineage, so, or a pedigree. Gotcha. So it's just one of them fancy dogs. I'm sure as I kind of get in the field, I'll be made fun of because you kind of got your setters, your hunters, and then you have your lab people. And typically your fancy dog people are carrying their over unders. I'll be carrying my nice pump Benelli Nova. That's the way I roll.
I've got a retired pup now, but I've had her forever. She's 13. I've got a German short hair pointer. And there's so many of my friends have hunted over, got their very first rooster over. I've got a really nice 37 bar rooster that I'm looking at in my basement here right now that my dog brought back, and she's hunted so hard for so many years, but she's been retired for the last 2 years. So,
oh yeah,
I haven't done a ton of birds since I retired her, because she's like, she was my buddy and we hunted so many birds together. And when I retired her, I just haven't had the energy to go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a newer thing for me to get back into pheasant hunting. That's something I haven't, or grouse hunting. It's something I haven't done a whole lot of in a while. So I have to, I want to do this dog justice. And the guy that gave it to me, I talked to him today, and he was like, yeah, and there's something about those dogs. They literally hunt in their sleep. And I was like, you ain't kidding. This dog is hunting flies around the house. It's pointing flies, and then I kill them, and she's like, okay, where's the next one? It was like hunting all the time. And it's drives my, she's used to my golden retriever that is really nice floor decor that doesn't move, and he's the most gentle dog ever. But this setter too is, we've got a 4 month old, and that she is just gentle and does a really good job. She's a good family dog. But
well, elk and black bears are my thing, so
oh sweet,
I'll help you wherever I can.
Cool. Well, we've done, just had a few pretty good black bear things going on. I'm headed to Minnesota for my very first baited or over bait bear hunt. That's going to be a new thing for me. I've just hunted bears in Colorado, and that's more of an opportunistic, you got to cover ground and find them, whereas right. Over bait is going to be a little different, but at least I'm getting to do it with my bow, so I'm excited about that.
Have you seen the bear that I got this spring?
No, I didn't.
I got a 550 pound 22 5/16.
Holy crap.
Yeah, he's that was a spring bear too. Can you imagine how big he'd be in
holy
the bigs?
Holy crap, no kidding.
Yeah, 22 5/16, and got him with my bow. And he's a giant.
Holy smokes.
We actually thought that before we skinned him, I thought his skull would be 23. That's how big his head was. His neck was 43 inches round.
I just see that.
And
now.
His chest was 65 inches.
Holy crap. That does not look like a fresh out of the den.
Jeepers. You know, I've had that bear on camera for 4 years, and but he's been nocturnal, and he only daylighted to, like, he's come out to daylight lots, especially in June when the rut was on, but never when I was there. Like, that bear knew I was whenever I was there. And this night on June 2nd, he slipped up and he didn't want to come in the bait, but he really wanted to, but he didn't want to actually come into the bait, so he just kept walking around it. If I'd had a gun, I'd have shot him 100 times because he was just out of bow range, kind of just real shifty. And then I ranged this spot with my rangefinder. I'm like, okay, if he goes by that spot again, I'm pretty sure I can make that shot. And sure enough, he came in right before dark and went right exactly that spot, and I slipped an arrow right into him.
Oh, man. Well, here's a question then. I've hunted bears and know, like, their eyesight isn't quite as good as deer, but I mean, their nose kind of makes up for that. When you're in a tree stand and they're coming in, do you hunt them just like a deer with the very little movement, or can you get away with a little more?
Well, the big bears, you can't. Like, they see everything. The smaller and the medium sized bears, you can actually talk, and you can, like, if you have a friend in the stand, like, they seem to be way more comfortable with you. Mm-hmm. But the big bears, like, anything that are 20 and above, it's funny because this bear had me pegged so much that I'd self filmed it too. So, you could hear in the camera, you can hear me talking to myself, whereas I was like, I was afraid to even make eye contact with him because I was afraid that he would spook. So I'd be like, don't look at him, don't look at him, don't look at him, don't look at him. And I'd be like, don't move, don't move, don't move. Because, any movement. And like, it's weird. Like, I got that bear, and the very next night, one of my best friends brought his son up, never hunted big game before. Was going to shoot a bear with a crossbow, thinking, you know, a 200 pounder or something like that. And the second biggest bear I've ever seen in my life came in that night. It was a brown bear. And they were in the stand next to me. I was in the stand right to the right of them. And when that bear came in, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this bear is so big. And so I was filming, and it chased off a small little 100 pounder off the bait. And then those guys must have moved. I never saw it, but I saw the bear look at them, and then he turned around and walked away. Never came back. So I remember looking at Darren saying, how come he didn't shoot? And well, he's a young kid. He didn't, it was Like, he thought maybe the bear would give him a better shot, but there was a time where he could have shot him broadside at the bait, but that's how cagey are. Like, they must have moved or did something, because I saw the bear look at them and then just turned around and walked away. He didn't run away, he just walked away. So those big bears, it's, you cannot move in the stand. You know, like I said, the intermediate bears, you know, like the 18 to 19 inch bears, you can usually get away with, I've had friends in there where we talk and, you know, screw around because they're not the big ones. But as soon as the big ones come in, you cannot move.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. It'll be, interesting. I'm going to do it from a tree saddle too. That's kind of a new thing for me. We'll see how that goes.
Gotcha.
And then
shot. Well, you know, they make really good stands nowadays that have big platforms.
Yeah.
So, get yourself one of those. And you know what I tell everybody when it comes to baiting bears, and not that I have to justify it, but what I tell people is, when they hunt with me, it's only archery hunting because the baits are fairly close, but it's more selective hunting. It's more, taking the mature bears, you know, not shooting the sows. And so when people say, oh, it's, you know, you're hunting over bait, it's not fair. It's the opposite. I think, you know, I've guided in BC for my whole entire adult life. And if it was a black bear and it was a good size, we shot it. Like, we didn't have time to sex it or anything like that. Like, it was just a, you know, if you were lucky enough to find a nice bear in the wild, you're hoping it was a boar, but you'd take a sow. In here, I mean, you don't have to rush to, you know, you don't have to rush to shoot. So, like, I always tell everybody, especially, I love taking first time bear hunters that's never shot a bear before or never shot a bow at a big game animal. The black bear is the perfect hunt for that over bait, because you don't have to rush to shoot anything. You sit in the stand for 8-10 hours, look at, you know, 20-30 bears, and then pick the one that you want to take. And that's what I always say. Like, for me, I've been fortunate enough to up the bear every year. And I mean, I'll never beat War Pig, the bigger bear I got, but, I've been lucky enough to be, you know, I got an 18 inch year, then I got an 18 and then almost 19, and then I got a 20 inch year, and then I got the 22 inch year. And so, I mean, it's always been sort of selective. Now I'm going to, my task is to try to find a color phase, a nice big color phase bear. Yep. And, so that's what I always tell everybody. Like, if there's one way to get people into hunting, black bear hunting over bait is the absolute guaranteed way to do it, because they're always, for the most part, always going to see something, and it's fairly easy to hunt. So
yeah, well, I'm looking forward to that. And then I got another tip today just about shot placement on them being a little further back. Is that pretty true? Then say a deer or...
Yes, like the way bears are, is like if you shoot them right behind the shoulder or right under the shoulder like you would a deer, you know, the only good chance you have is a heart shot. So what I always tell everybody when they talk in placement is point at the middle of a bear. So like if you're looking at a bear, point at the middle of them and then just go 4 inches to the right or left, whichever is closest to the front shoulder, and that's where you want to go. So it's really, really easy. You just put that pin right in the center and then just move a couple inches to the right or left and send it, and you'll always get the lungs.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of like that shot on deer and elk anyway, just hitting the big mass of the lungs. I don't really like trying to aim it low right in the pocket there. I just love big lung shots, and I maybe by accident that's where my arrow tends to go anyway, because I fall apart and an animal comes up close to me. So totally different.
Well, you know that a bow and arrow is so arrows are so devastating. If you get them in the lungs, they're not going far.
Right. Well, I'll add this little piece in there because it was good stuff, but yeah, let's get rolling. And if you wouldn't mind, real quick, just introduce yourself, kind of what your background is, and yeah, what you'd like people to know about you.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on. As we were talking before, elk and kind of black bear are my
two most favorite animals to hunt. And for me, it started, I'm a prairie guy in southeastern Saskatchewan, Canada. But I moved, every fall I'd move to northern BC and hunt as a big game guide. And I kind of fell in love with elk hunting. And when I first went to BC, well, I started in the Yukon first and then went to BC, northern BC. I hunted everything. Like, I guided for mountain goats, sheep, elk, moose, black bears. But as I got sort of more senior at that, I fell in love with elk hunting and elk calling in particular. And so my last sort of 7-8 years I worked there, that's all I did was just elk hunter after elk hunter and elk. And, after I got done guiding, I kind of sort of freelanced, did some filming for guys, and guys would, you know, fly me out to Arizona or Montana or someplace like that, wherever they had a hunt, elk hunt, and I would film it for them as well as calling. I kind of took the calling and fell in love with that. And yeah, I the last about 25 years I've been doing elk hunting, elk calling seminars, where I try to help people do some calling and using calling into and hunting strategies kind of together. And I think there's lots of people are intimidated with hunting or calling, and I just try to alleviate that by giving them some tips.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm a full-time police officer here in Saskatchewan and Regina. 18 years I've been at that. So I try to do the hunting on the side, but I always say I work so that I can hunt.
Yeah, absolutely. And you found a little success on the stage too, doing some elk calling, it looks like. So that kind of speaks to what you're able to do. I had a quick question first on... I'm not sure season structure kind of in BC and, kind of got a few other Western states here down here figured out as to what those season structures are, but parts of the season, we got early season and that late August, early September, kind of that mid season and then late season. What's your, for archery and rut hunting, what is your probably favorite time to hunt? And I'm going to assume it has something to do with how you communicate with them, because it sounds like you enjoy calling. I mean, that's why we elk hunt. We like talking to them.
I've done so many, I've guided so many hunts, like over 200 hunts I've guided for. And I've kind of kept track about that exact kind of question that you're asking about when's the best time. And I've actually got it pinned to the actual best day for hunting, believe it or not, I've got this over the years, is the 18th of September is the absolute best day. It's so, you said it in your, when you, in your question is like, early season, kind of late season, but for elk, the early season is that, you know, 25th to the, say the 7th of September. And historically the bulls will start whistling in that time, but they're not overly receptive to you calling back. And so, and plus generally it's tougher hunting that time of the year because you're running into a lot of the trees have lots of leaves on it. You could run into, really warm temperatures and stuff like that. So the early season for archery, you know, it can be successful if you run into a bull that's really receptive, but it seems like as soon as you move into that second, third week of September, when the bulls do have cows already and they're very vocal, like they're, you know, they're trying to service all the cows that they can, as well as fend off all the other bulls that are trying to steal those cows. So yeah, like the start of the third week of September is the absolute best, what I would consider a full rut, the most bugling that goes on, and they're generally the most receptive at that time of the year.
And you just might have kicked out a number of hunters too. Like you get a good chunk of the people that are excited and want to get out the first opening day and blah blah blah. And maybe some of them have left. Now, in Colorado, where I do a lot of my elk hunting, that's sort not really the case. It can be times it's still just an orange, or not orange because they're archery hunting, but still vehicles at every trailhead, but you can get away. That's interesting. I think that's funny how you got it down to a day. But maybe around that time frame, kind of what's your game plan? Maybe that's an example of a hunt that sticks out, and why that's been so successful, and maybe some of those calls and things you've used in the process.
Well, the reason I find that the third week of September is the best, either rifle or archery, is because the bulls are so receptive to the call. Like when you're hunting archery season early, if you're so lucky, well, you have such a small time frame when they're vocal, and that is usually dependent on the weather. So like if they're whistling first light, they generally stop whistling so early that it's really tough to get on a bull. You know, if the weather turns cold, you know, that might bump that up a little bit sooner or make them a little bit more receptive. But I just find that it's so weather dependent. As soon as it starts to get really cold in the evenings and early mornings, and that's generally mid September, that is why I say that's so good. But primarily, if you are in good elk habitat and good area, if you whistle and they whistle back, generally you have time to, you know, go get them or bring them to you, however you're hunting. So that's why I'm always say that. Like I get that question so much about archery season and, you know, how people can be successful. And you certainly can. Like, I'm not discouraging anybody from going out at, you know, the end of August or the beginning of September. It's just that there's a lot of things that you're working against at that point. And generally, the cows aren't in estrus at that time. So it's the bulls are just now starting to get out of their bachelor groups, and they're just starting to look for cows. So it's, you have a lot of things working against you, whereas you move into the full rut. If you get if a bull has four or five cows with them, you can really work that bull.
Huh? Yeah. I was just, you made me think a little bit. So I was literally digging back through some pictures to see a date on a hunt that Dad and I had that was just so epic. September 12th. That's when that was. Just found that.
Okay.
There you go. Oh my gosh. It just was nonstop of which bull do we want to chase, and had so many opportunities that just, yeah, it was good. So yeah, cause I found some success in that earlier season of, maybe that's me not being a very good elk caller. And I seem to like to play around with them when they're pre-grouping up, and it's like this bull's with cows this day and then he's with no one the next day, and then it's just like this weird herd dynamic there. I don't know what's going on, who are you, and just trying to find out everything that's going on. So maybe that was during that kind of 12th or so in the previous years. But I mean, it's, you've got a lot of data there to go off of. 200
elk hunting. Yeah, elk hunting is so weather dependent too. Like, yeah. You know, I kind of jokingly say the 18th is around the best time, but that could be moved up, you know, a week or week and a half if they've gotten cold, and then that gets the cows in estrus, as well as it gets the spurs that, you know, that I used to call it a kind of a chemical reaction that snaps when the weather turns cold. The elk, something happens in their brain that they just start going crazy and start bugling like nuts.
Does your calling game plan, or just your game plan when you've got an elk located, does that change from those different times in the season?
No. Although if they're doing a lot of the vocalizations, then I don't have to. So I guess, yes, I said no, but I guess yes, it will. Because if they're very vocal, then I call very low. If they're not very vocal, then I'm actually very active in calling and trying to spur on. Like early season, I'm really trying to, I don't know if you turkey hunt. I'm assuming you do. If you live in the States, I absolutely love turkey hunting, and elk hunting and turkey hunting are so similar in the way you hunt them. You know, you got to call them, and you know, you, you know, all the things. They're very vocal and they call back. And I say this a lot, and I really mean it, that elk react a lot like a turkey, in the sense, you know, like a turkey, you can shock gobble them, right? You do a predator call, or you do something where they shock or they gobble at you that you can locate them. And elk are no different. Like if I walked into an area that I knew had elk, but I didn't know where they were, and I let out a really big bugle and I get an instant reaction, what I call that is a shock bugle. It's all of a sudden there's another elk, or what they think is another elk, in their area, and they bugle back at me. Soon as I do that, if they're very vocal, I let them do most of the work, and then I try to get in close. But if they're already bugling and I'm in an area where I know that they are, then I just will try to seduce them with a cow call and get in close. And then primarily with archery, if they're really vocal, then you have the advantage of sneaking in on them, pending you got a cow or somebody that doesn't bust you, and you can bring them to you to finish them with a cow call. And so, yeah, I mean, if they're not calling much, I do a lot. I'm very, very vocal. But if they're calling quite a bit, then I generally don't call at all. And, well, I cow call is what I do.
I've noticed that. I'll, with those really vocal elk, I'll know where they're at. I mean, it's obvious. You know where they're at. And then once I start to make a play on them, and I haven't seen them, and I can't visualize any direction they're moving, and I'm thinking early mornings in my main spot that I really like to go, I don't have a, and to give you a little background on this, I don't have a really good camping spot, because otherwise, I mean, I need to get in there. It's just elk everywhere, elk all around. So it's not a great spot. I try and put it on the edge of the private and public, away from kind of where I'm headed in the day. But I'll wake up, kind of see where these bugles or sounds are coming from, and do exactly that. Get as close as I can. And when I can't see them, I often see, it seems like they're just continually moving away and away and away, yeah, and further away. And I've never been able to figure that one out. Like, wind's good. They wouldn't still be slowly, slowly bugling, walking away if they smelt me. If they smelt me, they'd be gone. So I'm not sure quite kind of what the, that's always kind of perplexed me. I'm not sure what's going on. And it's been multiple.
Well, I think that as soon as you know, day breaks, they're always on the move. And so that's what you said is very, very typical of what they do. Like, soon, it almost seems like instantly the sun kind of, you know, you start to see this, the sunlight or daylight, mm-hmm, the elk are moving to their bedding areas instantly. So, that happens quite a bit here in Saskatchewan, the elk that we have. We have a lot of farmland that they come out into, and then they move off into their bedding areas. And what I tell everybody there is, you know, rather than bugle to them right first thing, you know, pattern them and then try to intercept them as they're moving. Because if they're not being harassed, or if they're not being educated with other hunters, you know, bugling at them, generally you can kind of pattern what direction they're going to go. And then I always tell everybody, just simply ambush them, and then, if a bull is bugling and he's not being overly pressured, he's going to call the whole way. It doesn't matter if he's moving or if he's, like, rarely are they moving off silent unless they've been educated by other hunters. And then if that's the case, then you just physically have to try to intercept him, as opposed to calling, you know, vocally. But, if I were you, I would move off to where in between them and where their bedding area is, and just wait for them.
And one of those things is the country I hunt is kind of the high desert of Colorado. So it's aspen pockets, but pretty open with that, all the sage, and then the bigger, taller brush-like trees, the sarvisberry and chokecherry trees and all that stuff. And I noticed I've got that pattern down on the ridge over. It's just always getting there. It's knowing which draw they want to drop into. There's a series of four draws, and it's always tricky to figure out which one. they're going to come up and over and drop down into. And that top ridge line is so bare and open that I've kind of figured out how I need to access it. So it is a get up really early so I can get in there, because it's probably 2 or 3 miles just to get to that point, and get there as that sun is coming up, because they're already there. As soon as you can see, they're there in that open ridge line, and there's just that small little distance between that open ridge line and the thick aspen pockets. And then once they go in that aspen, that bedding area, then they're there and they disappear, or they stay there for the day. So that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, that's very, very typical of what they do. And, you know, historically you catch them, you know, within 15 minutes of getting to that bedding area. Like you see them on the hillside and then they're gone.
Yeah, it's driving me nuts. I'm not going to be in there this year. It's absolutely killing me, because I know that there's some really good bulls, and I keep running through series after series of things we've done there, and with the shoulda, coulda, wouldas, and I can visualize a couple of monster, nice, really nice bulls that got away. So it's bothering me. I don't have a little redemption this year, and my dad is getting a little older, and he's wanting to. We're going to go in there next year for sure. But just having a 4-month-old, this was not the year for that to happen.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But yeah, so let's look at, say, a more detailed look at, we got them vocalized, or they are vocal. No, let's make them not so vocal, just a few bugles here and there. And as you're approaching, like what kind of calls, what kind of a detailed approach? And maybe that's an example from a previous year.
Well, if they're not overly vocal, what I try to do is, whenever any elk that I hear being vocal, I try to assess what kind of a state of mind, if that makes any sense, that they're in. So generally what I'll do is, if I hear an elk bugle, obviously I want to try to pinpoint the area it's at, but I also want to see if it's whistling lots, but in your scenario, you're saying it's not. So then I want to see what it is receptive to. So I will generally cow call first back to it. And if he doesn't reply, then I know that I'm in for a little bit tougher of a go, because if he doesn't reply to a cow call right away, then I will try to sort of bump him with a bull call. And if he calls then I know I've got a fairly, aggressive bull. And then, so that's kind of what I do. Like I try to spur them on to decide what kind of state of mind are they receptive to the cow or the bull, because, if they just call sporadically, it's very, very difficult to make a stalk on them, because you could step on them and not even know that they're there. So I always try to assess where they're at. Like, I'll give you an example. I was on a big, 6x6 hunt last year with a guy, and, the wind was just howling, and I had never hunted in that area. He just called to see if he got drawn in a really good area, so he asked if I could come and call for him. So we got out of the truck, and it was a couple mile hike to where the elk were, and I bugled, and instantly that bull bugled back. So that's a good indication that, okay, he knows that there's possibly another bull there. I cow called. He didn't call back. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's unusual, but it might not be overly unusual if he's got a bunch of cows, which turns out this bull did. So then We snuck in a little closer. I bugled, bang, he bugled back. And then once I did that, I'm like, you know, there's no need for me to keep calling to this bull. He is basically announcing now where he's at, even though he wasn't overly aggressive with his calling. Every time I called, he called back. So all I'm doing is not trying to call him in per se, as to more to locate his position so that I can make a plan. And it just turns out that we come over the rise and he's standing right there at 200 yards in just outside the trees with a bunch of cows, and the guy shot him and it made a good shot. But generally what I try to do is I try to call to them so that I can make a plan, because if they don't call at all, then you are, especially our training, then you're really in a tough hunt. Like, how are you going to get them if they're not being vocal? So if they are calling a little bit, locate them, and then we got to try work. We have to decide, is he going to answer to me as a bull, or is he going to answer to me as a cow?
And we all know that elk bugles can sound like everybody else's voice. I mean, you got, everybody sounds a little different, so elk can sound a little different. But what are some of those things that you've picked up on to tell the mood, like you're saying, of their behavior? Have you picked up on, I mean, obviously if someone really rips, you can tell when they're pissed and they're mad, but is there anything else that you've picked up on that's a indicator of their mood or kind of receptive, not just to a cow or a bugle, cow call or a bugle? We know how they're responding there, but a little more detail, say on what that, picking up on any kind of other clues in their voice.
Yeah, you know, like, that's a great question, because that's in essentially what I'm doing when I'm calling the bulls. I'm trying to figure out what he's thinking. And generally, you know, it comes down to, is he bugling at you? Because if he's bugling at you, then you have his full attention and he's trying to locate where that sound is coming from, which is good. But generally what happens is do you get a bull calling and he calls back to you? You almost get that bugle where you know that he's walking away. And because it's what I call directional calling. They're, you know, you can always tell when he's bugling away from you or bugling at you. So if he's bugling, if he answers and then all of a sudden the next bugle, you clearly could tell that he's bugling away from you. There's a good chance that he's moving his cows or he's moving off. And that's when I really start to go after him. And I always tell people, or my hunters that I've guided over the years, is if I get an elk bugling at that and he's moving away, at some point I will pressure him so much that he will show himself. So meaning I go right after him and I start aggressively cow calling on him until he'll turn around, and you said it yourself, you know, when they're mad, you just keep pressuring him and he'll keep calling back until there's a point where you'll be able to know where he will actually be coming to you. So you're going to him, cow calling the whole way until, or bugling, whichever is working at that time, until he's turning you, and then he'll be calling in your face. Once you do that, then you really have to pick your, what you're doing, because if he's coming at you, you want to be hidden as best you can, because they're looking for that spot. Like, unlike us, when something calls, we just kind of say, oh, it's coming off from the right. They can actually pinpoint the tree that's coming from. So the difference is you have to be ready. So if they're moving away from you, you just keep pressuring them until they're bugling back in your face. Then you know that you got a bull that's committed. And I just love that. I just love, you know, pressuring a bull. And it might take, you know, 45 minutes. It might take an hour. That's why the morning hunts are so more productive, because you can really pressure them. And then all of a sudden, it's like a switch flips, and he'll change his tone when he's also ready to commit to you. When he has to see you, and I use that has to, because when a bull starts to scream at you, it's like they need to see what you were doing. They have to find that cow or whatever it is, and they literally stop bugling and they start screaming. Once you're at that point, you know you're gold.
Huh. Yeah, and I looked at the word pinpointing as you were saying that. And I wrote it down because that's where I get in trouble also, of them knowing my location. So when you know that they are coming in, this last 100 yards is where I'm the weakest. I guess that's the majority of the hunt. But so in that last 100 yards, trying to not, and I do a lot of solo hunts, not to allow them to get me pinpointed. I'm stuck there, or it's that hang up zone. What's your advice for when they do know where you are, because you're vocalizing as well, and they're pinpointing you? Are you moving?
So, what I say to that scenario, I can give you a quick story about that exact scenario.
Yeah, do it.
So I'm with my good friend. We're in Wyoming, and we had this bull, exact same scenario. He was walking away. Finally, he turned. You could tell that he was bugling now in our face. And I remember saying to my buddy, Wayne, I said, we have to be behind that tree right there, because that's where he's going to come out, is, you know, just up from that tree. I said, we have to be at that tree. And because I could tell the way he was bugling, that was the exact spot. So what I tell people to do, and what I do, is I will steer them. Now, depending the wind, of course, but if, let's assume you're in the bush, you don't have a ton of wind, I start to directional call. So I'm steering them to where I want. So the few archery hunters that I have guided, I've all called where I've driven the bull right past the archery hunter because of the way you call. And that's just directional calling. That's using your hand to project your call to the side, because they really do know how to pinpoint. Like, if you are standing by a tree and you're calling, and all of a sudden that bull shows himself, he is staring right into you. They know exactly where that's coming from. But if you directional call, they can't do that, right? Because if you're projecting off to the left, they're going to steer off to the left. And one thing about elk is, if they don't try to get your wind, they're going to come right to the spot where you're calling.
That's always something I've been curious about, just because I've been directing my calls, like, I wonder if this works. I just don't know. It's like, I feel like this should be bringing them, or sending, making it sound like I'm over there. So that's good to hear that I got something right there. Another thing you can do
that once they're close, like where they're within 40 yards, and sometimes you'll be within 40 yards and you still can't see them because of whatever trees you're hunting in. Mm-hmm. But what you can also do is call directly away from you, because what that's doing is now it's directing your call, like you're leaving and now he's going to have to come. All it's doing is kind of alleviating his anxiety about how close he is to you. So quite often what I'll do is I'll turn my head around and I'll cow call directly away, and he can still hear that, but at least it's projecting it like I'm going the other way.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes,
and I mean, I will never bugle at a bull within 100 yards. Because there's, in my opinion, there's no such thing from like human as a quiet bugle. And so if I bugle at a bull and he's within 100 yards, I just feel like now I'm challenging that bull to a fight, and 9 out of 10 times they're just going to stop what they're doing. And so I might call to a bull that's 200 yards away, but then I could also make up by booking it towards him. But if he's within 100 yards, and you know how still it is in the trees, if I bugle at a bull and he bugles back, there's a good chance that he's just going to stop right where he's at. So you'll never see me bugle at a bull under 100 yards. I just won't do it. I'll just keep seducing him with the cow call.
And so that's what you're seeing, is those bugling under 100 and they're hanging up and just kind of staring.
Well, yes, because the reason for that is elk are notorious. They want to be lovers, not fighters. Now, we all know that, of course, elk fight, and they fight lots. But the problem is the majority of the time they want to mate, and they don't want to necessarily fight. And so if you're in tight to a bull that's actually calling, I never bugle to them because I want them to be relaxed. I want them to want to breed or think that there's another cow. And I mean, the beauty thing about cow calling is you can have five different calls on you. You know, they make so many different manufacturers make so many different cow calls, and you can use your mouth reads that you can project that there's a small little herd of cows, but you can't do that with a bull. And then when you bugle at a bull, you're only saying one thing: hey, I'm here to steal your cows, or I'm here to fight you. And if he doesn't want to fight, there's a good chance that he's going to stop or he's going to move away from you. So I've seen guys call, like, bugle to bulls that are in close, and it just shuts down the hunt right now. Like, they just don't want to, there are times, and I mean, people listening to this are probably like, oh, you're full of crap. I've had bugle, and I'm not saying that they won't come to a bugle call. I'm just saying I personally won't do that because I think they want to breed, not necessarily fight.
Yeah, I kind of like, I got this little bite call thing. It's got external read to it, but it just sounds, I like the way it sounds. And I get a couple of those different read ones, and then my diaphragm calls as well, kind of my go-to. So yeah, those are...
You know, I've been using the same call since, I'm trying to think here. I want to say 1997. I've been using the same soft bite since 1997, and I just went and grabbed it here, and I'll just, I'm not overly sure it'll sound very good to the phone, but I've been using the same call, and, you know, I've called in hundreds of bulls with that call, and that's the one I use exclusively for locating my bulls, once I get them calling with that, then I move to my mouth read once they get in close.
Okay.
But I just love the soft bites for that exact reason. They're so easy to use.
I've had some question on that. My dad has one. One of my best friend has one. It's that little green one with that you bite. It sounds really high pitch and whiny, but yet I've seen it work.
Yep.
I struggle with it. Is that, and that's what it kind of sounded like what you had too. It's just a nice, it's really high pitched, but, is that imitating a cow pretty well and not just a younger cow? Or,
you know, to be honest with you, it does not sound like your normal cow talk.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I can think of is it's a vocalization maybe when they're starting to be in estrus, because this one here, that's more your estrus raspy. It's not like that one. And, I don't know what it is, but that's been around my neck since 1997. Huh. And it's been on every hunt since then. And to this day, that is my go-to. Like, my mouth reads, I can sound just like a cow elk. Like, there's no issue with that at all. But I just find that is, I get more response from that. And another thing that I can do with that one in particular is I can also put it in my tube and I can blow my tube, and I just don't know what it is. Like that big bull elk that we got last year, that's the cow call that it answered to. Now, we didn't have to bring that bull in overly close because he was standing out in the open, but had we got it close, I would have used that until he'd have been within a certain range, and then I'd just move to my mouth read.
Yeah, I've done that a couple of times, but explain what you can about using your bugle tube. Are you just reaching out a little further? Does that change, like, the dynamics of the vocalization you're doing, saying something different? Just reaching out further, what is it?
Yeah, it's just projecting the vocalization a little farther.
One thing that I do different than some guys is I don't, like, you know, when most people cow call, they're very quiet and very, you know, rear. And I'm like, how in the world are you supposed to, an elk 200 yards away is going to see, hear that? I said, you need to do it loud. And that's why I do it into my, bugle tube. So I'm just trying to project it, you know, three times the distance that I would normally. And then as you get closer, obviously you don't need that, but yeah. That's the only reason I do it. If I want to go from one canyon to the next and I want a cow call, I'll remember, all I'm trying to do is entice a response. I'm not trying to call them in at that point. I'm just trying to find them, you know, pinpoint them so that I can make a plan to get at them. That's all I'm doing when I'm doing. As soon as I got a bull calling, you know, our strategies are different, right? We're, you know, we got to play the wind. We have to move in on them. We have to call, you know, all that kinds of stuff. So I definitely wouldn't do that if I was, if they were fairly close to me.
Well, awesome. Well, what's your lineup for the fall then?
Well, I was supposed to go archery hunting or elk hunting here towards the end of the month, but I don't think that's going to work out yet. And then our rifle draw season starts for people that get, you know, in certain areas, starts on the 15th. So I may go down, like, we in the very southern part of the province, like close to the United States, we have these, an area that have some of the biggest elk in North America, like 385, 400 type bulls. And but they're very limited draw. And one of my friends from work got drawn down there. So he's going to try for a 350 plus. So I might go down there and call for him.
Oh man, that'd be fun.
I know. I just love it. And you know, for myself, I don't think I'm going to get out to archery elk now that things have kind of changed.
Yeah.
It's a bummer, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. Anything else? Like any other tags you think you're going to, you'll have or heading or doing more guiding then?
No, I didn't get drawn for anything this year myself. So, I'll basically just waiting for waterfowl and upland season for myself. And then of course, whitetail, in October, I might go mule deer. We have some really good mule deer up here. Mm-hmm. I might go archery mule deer once it opens up. Other than that, I'll just wait for whitetail and waterfowl.
Yeah.
It's kind of, this is a depressing year for me because I don't have a ton of big game hunting. Although the big bear I got this spring makes up for it.
So. Yeah, no kidding. The thing is, not just a pumpkin head, but it's at the end of the pumpkin patch where it's, they got the big ones. That's what that thing is.
you know that bear is, I've seen, you know, big bears harvested. That's nothing new. But this bear is an anomaly. Like he really is a once in a lifetime bear because like his head was so big. Like even, I mean, I know the skull was 22 5/16, but it was way bigger than that. Like he had jowls on his cheeks. Like if you can, I don't know if you looked at the pictures, but he has jowls on his cheeks that stick out like just incredibly. Like he truly is amazing. And that's a spring bear, like 550 pounds. And imagine how big that bear was in the fall before he went into his den.
Yeah, that's something else. My God.
So his official date, I can get him officially BNC at Pope and Young. September 21st is the 60 days expired drying period. So I've got him back. I got it beetled. He looks beautiful. I've got him, he's sitting on my mantle, but I have to wait till, the 60 days are up to get him officially BNC, but I'm hoping that he goes top 20, 25 in the world. That's how big he is.
Oh man. Jeez. Yeah. That'd be pretty sweet.
I know. I'm blessed.
What are you thinking on shrinkage on him is I don't know how much those skulls change versus antlers in that drying period.
I don't know, but from what I say, like from what I heard, I got them beetled. So I didn't get the skull boiled. So, there's not supposed to be a ton of shrinkage. I don't expect him to lose much more than, you know,
I don't know. I'm hoping he doesn't lose anything, but it won't be much if he does.
That's good. That's good. Did you rug him, or what'd you do with him?
Well, he's in the freezer right now, but my plan is to get a full-size mount of him. I mean, I have to.
Oh,
he's,
yeah.
A bear like that is... I have a three-quarter mount bear in my house, but I'm going to have to make this guy part of the
furniture.
That's right. I don't know. I have no idea where he's going to go, but.
Oh, you mount it, you decide, you take it there. And once you get it back, that's when you figure it out. I mean, that's.
Yeah. I tell my friends, I'm going to build a house around him.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's so exciting. I'll look forward to seeing a picture. I'm sure you'll post something. And, as that kind of comes around, I'll see if that scores as well as you're hoping. So, but if you wouldn't mind, just plug where people can find you, keep up with your seminars and things that you put on, and just stay in touch with how they can learn from you.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I am very active on social media. So I have a few Facebook pages. Like, of course, my real name, Marcus Simons, is my personal one. Anybody can get him hold of me there. But I have a channel, kind of like what you have, a little bit of a podcast called All Outdoors with Muck Simons. And I've been with Cabela's for the last 8 years as a pro staffer, and I have a pro staff page, Cabela's Pro Staff Muck Simons. So YouTube is All Outdoors with Muck Simons. Try to video it if I can, as much as I can, but I do all this stuff, so try to make other people successful and better at that. So if anybody has any questions or anything like that, like I said, I've been doing the elk seminars for about 25 years now. It's something I really love doing. I mean, here's the crazy thing about for me in elk hunting, and that people might laugh. I've never shot an elk myself. And so I've guided for hundreds of them, and I used to keep track. When I was a guide, I used to keep track, and I've traveled to Arizona, Montana, Wyoming, all over North America, you know, helping guys call me in. I've never killed one myself. But one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me was I was at an event in not too far from here, and I was getting a drink, and a guy tapped me on the shoulder. He says, "Hey, you probably won't remember me, but I took in your elk seminar about 10 years ago." And he says, "One of the tips you told me about is cow calling and then go after them. When they're hung up, you go after them." And he goes, "I got myself a big 5x5. And I said, "You know, that's why I do what I do, is to help other people." Cause he said that, you know, he'd hunted for years and never been successful. And just one little tip that he picked up from my seminar has made the difference. And, you know, that's why I do it, is to help other people.
Well, then you are the perfect guest for this show, because that's exactly what I'm all about, and this little podcast in Western South Dakota is all about, and just sharing stuff and talking hunting with people at 9:30 at night.
And yeah, I love it too.
Yeah, that's and we were joking before how I was saying that apparently podcaster or people who listen to podcasts don't really tune in till August, because it just blew up like over 50% more downloads. It was like, come on guys, you need to be thinking about hunting way more than that. Ask my wife how much we talk about hunting, or I talk at her, and it's enough for both of us. So for year round.
Yeah, I get that same thing. You know what I tell people at my seminars is calling elk is, so there's two things. There's calling for people, and there's calling for wild animals. And the people part are the, you know, the professionals, the world champion elk callers and stuff like that. And I think I can call as good as them. I mean, I don't go in the competitions like they do, but the other side of it is calling for animals, and animals don't care what you sound like. So I always tell people, fear missing out over the fear of failure, meaning who cares what you sound like as long as you're trying, because an elk doesn't know the difference between you or a wild elk. And so I always say fear, you know, missing out over fear of failure, because that's probably one of the biggest things I get in my seminars is people want to learn to call, but they're scared to, or their friends maybe mock them when they're trying to. wild elk don't care about that. Just do it. Get out there and call and try, because before, you know, you could maybe, in your opinion, sound terrible, but you might be successful, and that's all that matters. So don't, like, I hate when people say, I just would rather let somebody else call because they're better. No, man, like, you need to do it because they don't know that you don't sound bad.
I bet that's even worse in the duck blind. I think waterfowl hunters, you got your like one guy or two guys that blow on a call and everybody else just shuts up and you don't you say a word. Don't you say a word or
so,
don't you?
So that is true. And I'm not a very good waterfowl caller and I'm trying to learn, but I'm not very good. And I will get snarled at lots when I'm called because it's funny. Waterfowl hunters are, they think
passionate
that you have to be perfect or else it's going to turn the birds away. And whereas I don't believe that, like I mean, an elk is 100 yards away and you're whistling, it doesn't know that you're a human. It honestly has no idea. So like, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like I'll be in a goose blind and I'll try calling and next thing you know, I'll get a dirty look from my friends and say, stop calling.
Well, how are you supposed to get any better? But, you know, just like you're saying, that's where somewhere along those lines of in college doing the waterfowl hunting over in the Prairie Pothole region and going out elk hunting by myself, that's where I learned my confidence and just going and doing it by myself and forgetting everybody else. And then that's come back and been more of a calling for other people, just like yourself.
And the only other tip I'll give people about bull calling is learn to use a mouth read because bull calling mouth reads, the vocalizations are, once you learn to do it, are a lot better. And the tip I tell everybody when they're practicing is always, always practice with a tube because the sounds you make without a tube does not sound the same as when you have a tube. And even if I picked up a reed, put it in my mouth right now and try to bugle with it, it would sound awful. But if you hand me a tube and I did that same call, it would sound real. And remember, you're trying to train your brain for the vocalizations. So whenever you are doing it, cow calls are different. You don't need a tube for cow calls, but for bull calls, please, please use a tube.
That's a good tip. Well, on that note, we'll end our podcast for this evening and let you get on with your evening and I'm going to bed. So that's my
yeah, game plan. I'm off till Monday.
All right.
I'm off till Monday. So.
Perfect.
Perfect. Well, thanks for the opportunity for the chat. And
absolutely. No, thank you.
Good luck to everybody.
Thank you. All righty. Well, thanks again, and we'll chat with you another day. Got a deed to the land, but it ain't my ground. This is God's country.